Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
On Memorial Day weekend in 2015, Edward Niedermeyer took a drive down the West Coast. Edward covers cars, and he drove from his home in Oregon to a place called Harris Ranch, California. It's roughly halfway between San Francisco and L.A.
Kind of in the middle of nowhere, and I spent 4 days sort of smelling cow poop, you know, out in the Central Valley, waiting to see if this thing would be used.
This thing that Edward is referring to is a battery swap. Tesla was advertising that you could drive up and swap out the empty battery in your car and get a full new one swapped in minutes, which would solve one of the main annoyances of driving electric cars. It takes a lot longer than a gas-powered vehicle to charge.
I started to talk to people, ask them if they did that drive often. Many of them did. None of them had said that Tesla had reached out to them to let them use this swap system, as Tesla said they had. And so I asked them, you know, would you like to be able to use this? Is this something you would pay? And they said, sure, you know, I'm sitting here waiting for one or two more cars in front of me. Each one of those is going to take an hour to charge, and it'll take me almost an hour to charge. I'd pay almost any amount, you know, to swap my battery in and get going.
But as Edward sat there, it became clear that Tesla was not offering what it had promised.
But what they did do is they brought in extra superchargers and hooked them up to diesel generators, which was, you know, sort of this stark visual image of, you know, this company that's supposed to be not just a technological leader, but an environmental leader, really sort of not doing what they said that they would do. It turned out that the swap station was actually a way for them to take advantage of a loophole in the California's EV credit system. Tesla made, we're not sure exactly, but probably at least $1 billion just by pretending to have this swap capability for its cars. And so, you know, from that very moment, that pivotal first experience where I really sort of was confronted with this gap between what Tesla was saying and the narratives it was putting out there about the kind of company it is and what it exists to do, and then the reality on the ground.
That moment began to transform Edward into a Tesla skeptic. He later wrote a book about the company called Ludicrous, the unvarnished story of Tesla Motors. For a while, being bearish on Tesla was a lonely position. But these days, Edward has a lot more company because Tesla is now facing a new scandal about its car's batteries and how far they can take you. There's new evidence that the company rigged the numbers its car dashboards show drivers. Also, you know, there's Elon. Today on the show, how the Tesla dream was built on a mirage and how reality might change electric cars as we know them. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around. Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
If you drive an electric car, you probably know all about range. It's essentially how far you can go without needing to charge your battery. And Tesla has long been known for having cars with the biggest range, advertising that they get more than 300 or even 400 miles on a full charge. But explosive reporting from Reuters says that Tesla had essentially been rigging the dashboard range readout in its cars for years. Drivers would see one very optimistic estimate of how many miles they had left. And then, after the battery charge dipped halfway, the readout would plummet.
Essentially, you know, there's a sort of a real-time readout of your range, right? And so when you fully charge up, you know, people want to see they've got that amount of range. You could think of it almost as a slightly comparable thing where, especially in older cars, sometimes the gas gauge, it'll barely move it at all. You get to about half a tank and all of a sudden it starts moving a lot faster.
And you're like, oh my God. Yeah,
this is was kind of a thing with older cars. And with that, that was just a simple mechanical thing. There was no manipulation going on with that. But you can think of it in that sense where you leave home thinking you have all this range and then all of a sudden you start using it and it starts going down a lot faster. Hmm. If you imagine an automaker being able to remotely sort of change the size of your gas tank. Like, that's what we're talking about here. And I think it really shows that we're in an entirely new era of car ownership. And it's one in which I think where, you know, because you don't always know what's happening with all these software updates, you know, trusting that company is really important. And learning, you know, that Tesla's been acting this way certainly doesn't make me trust them anymore.
When customers called Tesla to report the range problems, Reuters says a special team based in Las Vegas diverted their requests instead. The team would tell customers, there's no problem with your car. It's fine.
And this is also something that Tesla has done throughout their history is sort of creating these call centers, both to sort of handle and divert and to manage incoming complaints. But they've also done this remotely as well. I did some reporting back in 2017 about a situation where people were experiencing sudden loss of power in their Teslas, right? The drive units just stopped working and while they were on the road. Dangerous thing. And it's the kind of defect that is always handled by every other manufacturer, including Toyota and Mercedes, who were using the same Tesla drivetrains at the time. They did full recalls because these are defects that affect safety. Tesla instead was calling people up and saying, hey, our remote diagnostics say that your vehicle would benefit from some kind of upgrade or whatever, something like that. And then they would basically go and be doing a stealth recall by reaching out and managing these things. Tesla's able to do this because, unlike most US-based auto manufacturers, they don't have a separate independent dealer network that services their vehicles. They do it all in-house. And so they can stand up the call center team, they can stand up the service teams, they can create these entire programs that, frankly, in multiple occasions and in multiple ways, actually breaks the law. You know, if you have a safety-related defect, for example, you have to recall that. There's a reason that law exists. Even if you're fixing it proactively, you still have to go through that process. This is different than that situation, but similar in that, you know, because Tesla has the full stack all under one roof, from sales to service to customer service, you know, and these phone centers, that they can handle this stuff and come up with strategies for managing customer complaints and customer problems without a dealer sort of in the middle saying, hey, wait a second, I'm not sure what we're doing is legal here.
And they were, in fact, diverting customer calls and canceling appointments and just sort of ignoring the issue.
That's right. And you know, Tesla is one of those companies that, you know, they've managed to get as far as they have in part because of they have a very different relationship with their customer base than other automakers do. One of the things that I found really fascinating, you know, in back in 2015, 2016, 2017, when I was reading a lot of Tesla forums, you know, there's this overlap between people who own the cars and people who own the stock. And what's really fascinating is, you know, on these forums, the owners would be the ones who'd be like sharing information and saying, hey, I'm having this problem. What's going on? You know, Tesla's giving me the runaround. And other owners would say, oh yeah, let's, you know, talk about this and figure out what's going on and hold Tesla accountable. And then you'd have the investor guys come in from the investor sub forum and say, no, you can't spread this information. This is going to help the short sellers. You know, if you help the short sellers, you're helping destroy the planet. You're destroying this company that's here to save the planet. So there's this really kind of cultish relationship that Tesla owners have. So I don't think most car companies could do this. Like, I don't think a Ford or General Motors could manage a problem this way, in part because, again, they don't have they have this dealer that's sort of stuck in the middle of this customer relationship, but also they just don't have this sort of cultish relationship with their customers where they can, and Tesla does have the power to sort of say, you know, hey, even though you're sort of encountering problems, you know, bear with us, or it's not a big deal, or this is just part of the deal. And because Tesla's new and because people love a lot of other things about Tesla, they're able to get them to go along with it.
I wanted to dig into some things you wrote for Slate about why the Range scandal feels so significant and is so significant. Tesla represents something about EVs that feels or felt viable, maybe for the first time on a big scale. Like, you could switch from a gas car to a Tesla and not that much about your life would change. Does that feel right to you, like that initial kind of flurry of excitement?
Yeah, absolutely. Tesla has defined how we think of EVs, both as consumers, but also our regulatory system and our incentives, right? The incentives that our entire policy around encouraging EVs is based on the vision that Tesla created, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's always going to be a first mover advantage or whatever, right? If you're the first one to sort of define a market, you get to define that market how you want. And, you know, for Tesla, the core attribute that really set them apart was the big battery. There were a lot of things going on with the marketing, you know, marketing to celebrities. There's the environmental angle. Certainly, I think now one of the biggest things was they really marketed cars that spoke to tech people and identified that people who work in tech have a lot of money and want premium cars that reflect who they are. In a lot of ways, that was a big part of what made Tesla what we know today. But embedded in all of that, the core at a technical level of all of it was the big battery. And this was why they said, you know, okay, we're starting out with expensive cars and we're going to make them cheaper over time.
Right. We'll scale it.
Yeah. And like, that argument was made as sort of an auto industry type argument, which makes sense, right? And a lot of things. There's a lot of different kinds of consumer products and other things that start out at the high end of the market and just get cheaper over time. The problem is that batteries and electric car batteries and electric cars are quite different than certainly the cars that they're replacing and a lot of other things. To this day, EVs are still a premium product in this country. And to a large extent, it's because of the government policy. It's because government policy assumes that the bigger battery, the more viable an EV is. And so you get more consumer subsidies for bigger batteries. If the entire incentive is just to move to EVs and, you know, you don't care how long it takes or what that transition looks like, then, you know, that makes sense. The problem is that because Tesla has defined the market, and because policy has sort of followed in lockstep with the vision around which Tesla has defined the market, we're stuck now with an EV market that's too expensive. EV prices have come down about $10,000, the average transaction price in the last year, which is huge, right? We've gone from about $65,000 to about $55,000. But that's still a good $10,000 more than the average car costs. And so EVs are still very much in a premium space. And what's really troubling is that, you know, sales are starting to slow because there's only so many people who can buy cars in the $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 price point. Tesla is making money, but for everyone else who's followed into the market as Tesla's defined it, this premium 200 to 300 mile range, you know, kind of attractive, sexy EV market, you now have too many automakers chasing too few buyers. They're having to cut the prices of these cars to keep them moving, even though at full price, they're not making money. And so Tesla has kind of created a bubble. It's a premium EV bubble. And that's okay. You know what I mean? If Tesla wanted to innovate an EV, you know, premium EV market and others want to compete with them, that's fine. We just shouldn't conflate that with a broader EV transition because those are two different things.
When we come back, why what Tesla does matters for everyone.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
It's no exaggeration to say that Tesla is the most influential EV company in the country. And Tesla's range estimates are a huge part of that. The company sold consumers and U.S. lawmakers a vision of electric cars that required no real change in our behavior.
Tesla's success has been very much predicated on the idea that we don't have to think about this. That here's this car, it just comes along. If you afford it, you just put it in. Yes, it's a little different. You plug it in at home instead of taking it to a gas station. But fundamentally, it's you don't have to think too much about it.
It's a one-to-one swap.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problematic part of all of this. And frankly, it's going to be difficult to get our way out of it. It's very easy when someone comes along and says, this is the answer, and it works for the initial market. You know, it's easy to just assume this will all just keep going along. The problem is that we are facing a real crunch in the supply chain for the batteries that it takes to make these cars. And putting 250, 300, 350, 400 miles range in every EV is going to dramatically affect our ability to electrify the fleet.
Edward argues that those big batteries and the promises of long-range drives are the wrong focus for electric cars. Instead, we should be tailoring them for a different purpose.
Americans drive 40 miles a day on average. That's a lot by, you know, global standards, but it's not that much compared to what people think they need in terms of electric car range. And I think the real critical one is that the vast majority of our trips start and end at home. And so we really should be emphasizing charging at home, in apartments in particular, rather than putting them out on the freeway. When you start to go down this line of thinking, what you realize is that the Tesla vision basically holds the 90 to 95% of the miles that we could actually electrify quite easily with small batteries, with e-bikes, with plug-in hybrids, with things like that, and holds all of that hostage to the most extreme 5% of use cases. It's saying if we can't electrify the road trips and the things that are very rare but are the hardest things to do with a battery electric vehicle, that like it's not worth electrifying the 90 to 95% of those miles that we could do with a much, much smaller battery. People buy these Teslas and Lucids and Rivians with these big batteries thinking that they're saving the planet. And really, in a way, what they're doing is they're hoarding about 90% of those batteries or 50 to 80% of those batteries. You know, if instead of giving 300 miles of range to one person who uses 50 to 100, call it, on an actual regular basis, you could be taking half those batteries and putting them into, again, plug-in hybrids where you drive, you know, your 40 miles a day are all electric. And if you go beyond that, then you burn some gas, you know, or an e-bike.
So you're sort of imagining a world in which if you have an EV, it is for school drop-off, work commute, you know, going to the grocery store, which is what most Americans use their cars for, but not the big road trip up and down the California coast.
That's right. Yeah. So we've fallen into a relationship with cars that is fundamentally predicated on internal combustion and gasoline. You know, gasoline is incredibly energy dense. It fuels incredibly quickly. you know, these are its superpowers. If you're like me, I have a Toyota Tacoma because I love to, you know, on the weekends and when I have time off, I go out into Central Oregon to the desert and I ramble around. I don't have a plan. I don't go from charger to charge. I ramble. EVs, on the other hand, have a totally different superpower, which is that you wake up in the morning and the tank is full, right? Hmm. And no matter how big a batteries we put in these EVs and how many superchargers we put on the freeways, it will never be it will never have the same superpowers as gas. Just as a gas vehicle, no matter what you do to it, it will never be able to magically fill up its tank every, you know, unless you have an oil well in your backyard or something. It will never fill up its tank every night. And so I think really the big lie that Elon Musk has been selling is that these things are the same. They're not the same. They're two separate technologies. And if we're really going to do this transition, which I think it's very important that we do, that we start by accepting that they're different and then proceed from there.
Isn't there a concern, though, that, you know, seeing these as completely different entities or seeing an EV as the school drop-off car might discourage the kind of like wild innovation that could create something more dramatic that really keeps changing the EV game?
I mean, look, there is plenty of incentive to develop new batteries. People have been, you know, trying to develop new battery technology nonstop for decades. You know, this never ends. There's always been a lot of money and a lot of, you know, whatever, scientific prestige associated with coming up with a new battery. The problem is that new batteries are really hard. Like, this is why gas beat out EVs in the first place. You know, EVs and gas cars had roughly comparable market share if you go back far enough in this country. The difference is that battery technology stagnated with lead acid and internal combustion technology improved dramatically. And by the way, internal combustion engine technology continues to improve. Like, it will never get to the point where it can, you know, be zero emission, of course, which is why we need these other things. But battery technology is slow to develop and hard to improve. And I think that's one of the things that people really have to understand about this is that when you develop a new technology that is manufacturable, whether it's an iPhone or a new kind of car or anything like that, you're talking about scaling manufacturing, right? The internal combustion engine is a good example of this. You design the engine, you design the manufacturing system for that engine. It needs supply chain inputs, but they're, you know, aluminum and steel and things that, you know, supply chains that have existed for a century. And so you can take that and you can build that factory all around the world. And each one can build hundreds of thousands of units and you can sort of cookie cutter that and manufacturing scales. Resource extraction is sort of the fundamental input to batteries. And so if we're going to scale battery electric vehicles, we're not talking about just designing a good battery and then a factory to make that battery. We have to scale up resource extraction to a scale that we've never done before.
Which is also problematic.
Hugely. And it's problematic in terms of all of the things that go along with resource extraction, you know, the environmental degradation, the damage to indigenous groups, all these things that for every kind of resource extraction exists. But it's also just slow. You know, some of these lithium mining techniques, it takes 10 years to build out a proper lithium extraction facility, right? And then you know, different reserves are different sizes, but it also costs different amounts to take different kinds out of the ground. So resource extraction, given that that's what this entire industry is going to fundamentally, you know, pivot on now versus, you know, again, like steel and blast furnaces and casting and stamping and all these sort of traditional forms of manufacturing, it all comes down to batteries. And fundamentally, the cost of electric vehicles, the cost of batteries, and therefore the cost of electric vehicles, the number one factor in all of that is how quickly and at what scale we can literally pull minerals out of the ground. That's a totally different game. Expecting industrial manufacturing, let alone high-tech style scaling, you know, of that kind of supply chain infrastructure is absurd.
Where does all of this leave Tesla? Because there have been a lot of high-profile issues with these cars, not just the range, but full self-driving, autopilot, et cetera, et cetera. Musk is an increasingly known and increasingly erratic commodity, but people keep buying the cars. Their Q2 numbers look good.
Their sales volumes continue to stay respectable. They've gotten bigger with the product lineup that they have. They've gotten bigger than I think most people would have expected. However, their margins are compressing, so they're having to cut price and they're having to cut profitability in order to keep the sales up. At some point, something has to give with that, and it'll either be the sales volume or the profit margins. Certainly, if there's trouble around full self-driving and autopilot in the regulatory sense, which is a whole other conversation that we can have, I think there too, it's actually another fascinating example of how Elon Musk has convinced a lot of people that the technology works a certain way when it really works completely different than how he portrays it. And so I think if you see government action with autopilot and full self-driving, all of a sudden their profits compress even more. And fundamentally, the problem is that they're not developing new models fast enough to sort of keep up. The car business is a treadmill, and they're not reinvesting as much as I think they need to be to keep new generations of products coming as demand peaks for the older ones. So I think Tesla is in as tough a spot as they've been. They've been in a tough spot the entire time. Starting a new car company is one of the hardest things you can do. And it's taken fooling a lot of people about a lot of things, frankly, to keep this company alive and to keep it going. I think fundamentally, it's almost always been an unsustainable business. And I think that fundamentally, it continues to have aspects of it that still make it unsustainable. That having been said, you know, they've been through a lot and they've survived a lot. And Elon Musk is a escape artist extraordinaire, and so I certainly wouldn't bet against him finding some way to keep things going. On the other hand, as has been the case, you know, literally the entire time throughout the entire history of this company, bankruptcy could also be a matter of weeks away. You know, it always has been. I think that's the part that people have not really understood if they haven't paid close attention.
Listening to you and listening to you describe the vision of electric vehicles that I think a lot of people have embraced, you are articulating something different, something that is smaller or just kind of a left turn from maybe how people thought, oh yeah, in a few years, we're going to buy an electric car. It'll be great. How can that idea translate to the broader public?
It's a great question. And I think it's one that has to be answered if we're going to sort of get things back on track. The way I think about it is that I think we need like a Fitbit for mobility. For a century, we've been sold cars with these visions of road trips and wide open deserts and canyon roads and the sun setting over the ocean and just freedom, right? The freedom of cars. We have to understand that freedom thing is fundamentally tied to gas. When you need to charge up your battery, you know, where you're basing that car matters. This shift is fundamental. And I think, like, if we don't do anything, people will continue to treat electric cars the way they treat gas cars without thinking about it because through sheer force of habit. And so what we have to do is we have to help people understand what their actual mobility needs are, not the fantasy, not the road trip, not heading off into the sunset, but like actually day in, day out, how are you using your, what are your real mobility needs? And are you using a vehicle or a mode of transit that or transportation that is appropriate to that? It all starts with us understanding what our actual needs are, with getting past this really ingrained habit of fantasizing when we buy our cars, which is why we buy trucks and SUVs, right? It's because we're not thinking about our regular use cases. We're thinking about the fantasy. And I think that it's okay to buy cars on fantasy, but that should be your weekend car. Right? During the week when you just need to get around, you know, let's think about how we reduce our needs to that to the thing that actually serves it most efficiently. And again, maybe it's not a car at all.
Edward Niedermeyer, thank you so much for this conversation.
It was my pleasure.
Edward Niedermeyer covers the auto industry and mobility technology. He's also the author of Ludicrous, the unvarnished story of Tesla Motors. You can check out Reuters' reporting on Tesla's range scandal in our show notes. Reuters says neither Tesla nor Elon Musk responded to their requests for comment. Tesla also did not respond to our request. And that is it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell. Our show is edited by Jonathan Fisher. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. TBD is also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. And if you like what we are doing here, the best way to support us is to join Slate Plus. When you become a Slate Plus member, you get all your Slate podcasts with no ads. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. We'll be back on Sunday with another episode. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.